And we'll follow Matthew's account of the resurrection of the Lord Jesus, starting in chapter 27 and verse 55.
Many women were there, watching from a distance. They had followed Jesus from Galilee to care for his needs. Among them were Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James, and Joseph, and the mother of Zebedee's sons. As the evening approached, there came a rich man from Arimathea, named Joseph, who had himself become a disciple of Jesus. Going to Pilate, he asked for Jesus' body, and Pilate ordered that it be given to him. Joseph took the body, wrapped it in a clean linen cloth, and placed it in his own new tomb that he had cut out of the rock. He rolled a big stone in front of the entrance to the tomb and went away. Mary Magdalene and the other Mary were sitting there opposite the tomb.
The next day, the one after preparation day, the chief priests and the Pharisees went to Pilate. "Sir," they said, "we remember that while he was still alive, that deceiver said, 'After 3 days, I will rise again.' So give the order for the tomb to be made secure until the third day. Otherwise, his disciples may come and steal the body and tell the people that he has been raised from the dead. This last deception will be worse than the first." "Take a guard," Pilate answered. "Go and make the tomb as secure as you know how." So they went and made the tomb secure by putting a seal on the stone and posting the guard.
After the Sabbath, at dawn on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to look at the tomb. There was a violent earthquake, for an angel of the Lord had come down from heaven, and going to the tomb, rolled back the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning, and his clothes were white as snow. The guards were so afraid of him that they shook and became like dead men. The angel said to the women, "Do not be afraid, for I know that you are looking for Jesus, who was crucified. He is not here. He has risen, just as he said. Come and see the place where he lay. Then go quickly and tell his disciples, 'He has risen from the dead and is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him. Now I have told you.'" So the women hurried away from the tomb, afraid, yet filled with joy, and ran to tell his disciples. Suddenly, Jesus met them. "Greetings," he said. They came to him, clasped his feet, and worshipped him. Then Jesus said to them, "Do not be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee. There they will see me."
While the women were on their way, some of the guards went into the city and reported to the chief priests everything that had happened. When the chief priests had met with the elders and devised a plan, they gave the soldiers a large sum of money, telling them, "You are to say, 'His disciples came during the night and stole him away while we were asleep.' If this report gets to the governor, we will satisfy him and keep you out of trouble." So the soldiers took the money and did as they were instructed. And this story has been widely circulated among the Jews to this very day.
Well, before Chris comes to preach from that passage, let's sing of that passage. Let's stand together and sing, "See What a Morning."
Take your seats. They're great truths, aren't they? Christ is risen. Now, we're going to spend a little bit of time now looking through in a little bit more detail the passage we had read for us. If you're a child, by that I mean kind of under 12, then there's going to be some sheets that are going to come around, along with some pens or pencils. So please do stick your hand up. You can have one each. And there's a mixture of crosswords, pictures, but also some questions to follow on the slide. So please do take that. Parents, you might want to just lean over and check they're not doodling too much. It's great to be together. I sat at the back, and it's just great to hear so many voices sing those things. Sing praise to that Saviour. On the screen in a minute. Oh, there we go. It's there. Who likes spiders? Ray Pooley, like spiders. There you go. Anyone scared of spiders? Scared of spiders? Yeah. They're not very nice, are they? They produce a certain reaction, a certain type of fear. What about this? Darkness. Yeah, that's not a mistake. It is meant to be darkness. Who's scared of the dark? Tiff. Oh dear, you're getting married. Did you know that before? Scared of darkness, it produces fear, doesn't it? We often have one of our kids come in at night, daddy, or it's actually usually mummy, thankfully. I'm scared, can't get to sleep, fear of the dark, scared. Now there's two, we could list a whole number of other things that we are scared of, that we're fearful of. Fearful of being alone, fearful of losing a job, fearful of illness or sickness. They're all fears, and they all are out there. We all harbour at least one or two of them. And they usually revolve around these types of things. You see, we are fearful of things that hurt us or could hurt us. That's why spiders, even though they're creepy cool, they can hurt us. In other countries, you might be fearful of snakes. We haven't got that issue here. We can be fearful of things that we have no control over. Things out of our control scare us because we like to feel that we're in charge, especially if we're a control freak. We fear things we don't understand. It's one of the reasons I don't like maths. I don't understand it. It scares me. But it can link to other things. We don't understand how we come to be in this world always. We're scared. It's beyond our understanding. And we also fear things that are maybe a little bit uncertain. You're probably sick of this word, but Brexit comes into that category, doesn't it? What's at the heart of all the things going on with Brexit is that uncertainty, that fear of the unknown. Yes, there's pride. Yes, there's a kind of few fibs going on here and there. But at the heart of it is the fear of uncertainty. We live in an uncertain time. We've seen it this past week with the burning down of a cathedral. People's response is fear. What's happening? Got no control over this. If you followed that on Twitter or social media, you'll pick up some of those things. What are we going to do with some of the things? I feel so helpless, one person said. Panic, uncertainty, no control, fear. And it pervades the culture around us. We live in a culture that is fearful, is scared. We try and hide it most of the time, but there's a smell of fear. A smell of fear that was similar to one experienced by these men about 70 years ago. That is a landing craft that travelled into D-Day on the beaches in Normandy. And that container, that landing craft, contained probably around 60 soldiers. The bombardment of the beaches had taken place, and now it was these men's jobs to go on in these tin craft to land on the beach and then to be fired at. And there are descriptions of men who survived it. And they talk about that journey onto the beach. And they use these terms. There was a feeling of sickness and a gut-wrenching in our stomachs. There was a smell of sickness, physical sickness, but a smell of fear. Not knowing if they were going to survive the day. A smell of fear. And we pick up a little bit of that smell, that aroma of fear, as we look in Matthew 27 and 28. Did you notice that as we read? There is fear all over the place. Now if we recap the events, we know that Jesus has been killed. He's been crucified. The Jewish leaders have handed him over to the Roman authorities. And they have hung him on a cross. And Jesus has hung in agony with nails through his hands and his feet, and he struggles to breathe because that's what crucifixion did. It caused you to suffocate on your own fluid that built up in your lungs. And as he struggles to breathe, his breath eventually gives out and he dies. And darkness comes over the whole land. That's scary. Darkness. Sun blotted out. And as Jesus dies, there's then an earthquake. And as there's an earthquake, people come back from the dead. There's tombs that open up. And people start traveling from those tombs back into Jerusalem. That's scary. But Jesus has died. That's the fact we're left with. Jesus is definitely dead. And there's uncertainty and fear that all the events surrounding his death have brought about. And we know he's dead because that's why it has that little section about Joseph of Arimathea. Did you notice that? Why is that in there? Well, it's to give that authoritative account that says, yes, he was really dead. The man Joseph, we're not told much about him, just that he's a man from Arimathea. In another gospel account, we're told that he's from the Jewish ruling council. So he knows who Jesus is. He might even been a believer, we're told that. But he goes and collects Jesus' body from Pilate himself. That would have cried bravery. The Romans were expert executioners. They didn't leave their job undone. And so when Pilate releases the body, we can be sure that he was dead, 100%. And Joseph lays the body of Christ in an unused family tomb and rolls a stone in the way. And so Jesus' death ends with Joseph putting him in a tomb, just as there'd been another Joseph who'd brought Jesus into the world. Symmetry there, isn't there? And the women see, they witness all this. Do you notice that? Back in verse 61, the women are there opposite the tomb. They witness all of this taking place. The same women who've been at the bottom of the cross looking upon Jesus as he died, and now they're seeing his death and burial. Jesus is dead. Uncertain times. Fear. You see, the Easter events cause that fear. They cause that smell of fear. Kids, I wonder if you can help me here. There are a number of verses where we spot different people being scared. We're going to look at some of these verses together. So the first one's going to come up. So verse 62 and 64, if you've got a Bible, then please open it at the passage we had read for us, Matthew 27. And try and find verse 62 to 64. And try and find who's mentioned that is scared in those verses. Can you spot them? If you can't, then maybe lean across your mum or the person sitting next to you. Give us a bit of a hand. Who's scared in those verses? Who's named in those verses? No? Have I got it wrong? I've got the wrong verses. It should be these. The chief priests and the Pharisees. You notice that the word fear is not mentioned, but their actions show that they're scared. They're scared of Jesus' reputation. Did you notice that? Remember how the deceiver said he would rise after 3 days. Remember that promise Jesus made, that man we just killed? We don't want that. We don't want that to come true. We don't want rumors that it might have come true. They're scared again. And so they try and put in place a plan that will prevent the body being stolen, prevent rumors coming out. There's fear. What about verse 65? Who's scared in verse 65? There's a few mumblings. Yes. Pilate. Yeah, Pilate. Not Pilate. I heard that read once. No, it's Pilate. Pilate. He doesn't want a fresh problem on his hands. What does he do? he plants or gives soldiers, proper soldiers, to go and guard the tomb. Because he's scared as well. Oh no, yeah, I've just sorted out this problem. I don't want another problem to come about. Let's place some guards there. He's fear. Maybe a more obvious one. What about verses 2 to 4 in Matthew 28? Who's scared in those verses? You again, go on. The guards. Yeah, do you see that? They are scared to death. Now, I would love to see that as a picture. Scared to death. Literally seeing an angel and becoming so scared that they just go still. Like they're dead. Fear at seeing. What about verse 5? The women. Yeah, do you see that? Don't be afraid, the women are told. Why are they told that? Because that's their natural response to what they've just seen, this angel. Don't be afraid. Fear again. What about verse 9? Women again. This time seeing Jesus. And Jesus says the same words. Don't be afraid. There's fear at what they see. Things they don't understand. An angel and Jesus there in front of them. And then you have the last section, 11 to 15. That's fear as well. They're reacting to what they've seen. These guards, they rush back to the chief priests and tell them what they've seen. I've seen an angel, and the body isn't there anymore. And there's fear, there's panic, and they call an emergency council. What should we do? I know, we'll throw some money at these soldiers to keep them quiet, to stop them spreading this rumor that's happened. It's fear. And then there's one group of people who aren't even in this story that we know are so scared that they've run away. Who are they? The disciples. You see that? Nowhere are they mentioned because they are so scared that they've deserted Jesus. All through Easter, you see fear, uncertainty, no control over these events that are happening, not understanding. But then right in the middle of this story, you have these words. Don't be afraid. Twice it's mentioned. Verse 5, the angel said to the women, don't be afraid. For you're looking for Jesus, who was crucified. He is not here, he is risen. Just like he said he promised he would. And then in verse 8, then Jesus comes. Suddenly Jesus is there. Greetings, Jesus says. I can think of better things to say than greetings. Hi, I'm here, it's basically saying. Do not be afraid. Well, why shouldn't these women be afraid? That they still can't understand the events. That's still there. That should be a fear. There's still an uncertainty about what's going on. But they shouldn't be afraid because Jesus has kept his promise. His promise of coming back from the dead, he has kept. His death, dealing with sin, is done. His resurrection, pointing to life, is complete. Do not fear, Jesus says. It's done. Finished. You see, if we understand the Easter story, we should have our fears, all of our fears, turned upside down. And our fears should be turned to joy. What are the two biggest things that we fear? Nigel mentioned one of them earlier. Death. Whether we like it or not, we're all scared of death. It looms at the end of our life. And if we're to believe the Bible, which we do, that death is accompanied with judgment. Again, something to fear. There are plenty of variables in life, variables at things that could or could not happen. You may get married in life, that's a variable. You may have kids, that's a variable. You may have that dream job. You may have good health throughout the whole of your life. Those are all things that could or could not happen. But the one thing certain in this life is that we will all have an end. An end point. That's non-negotiable. That's not variable at all. Death is to be feared because we have no control over it. And the Bible teaches that our death results in judgment. And that judgment is something we deserve for the way that we lived. And those two things, death and judgment, are about as certain as you can get. When you get on a train and tube station bound for Victoria, you know where your destination is going to be. You might get there 2 hours late, but you know, you get on that train, you travel, and you get off at the end. Well, in this life, we are on that journey. But there's no way of kind of getting off at Carl Shorten or Sutton. It's a one-way stop. God breathes life into us. He gives us life. And he will one day ask us to give an account for the way that we've lived, for the way that we've lived our lives. He forms us in our mother's wombs. He blesses us with many things. Many things we're going to enjoy this weekend. Relationship. Being together is good. Holidays. Aren't they great? Time to think. Time to enjoy the sun. Relaxation. Being able to put our hands to work, that is a good thing. Work is good. But having given us all these things, God will say, how did you respond to me? I gave you these things. But how did you respond to me? You see, despite God's good gifts, the Bible teaches us that we're all in the same boat. That we've all let God down. We see that in a verse in a book called Romans. Paul writes this: there is no one righteous, not even one. No one who understands, there is no one who seeks God. All have turned away. There is no one who does good, not even one. And that is everyone. You see, when we come on that day, when we meet God, it's going to be one of the shortest trials ever. Guilty. Guilty. And then guilty. Because that sin that we all have is going to be very evident. And God is going to look at that sin. He's going to say, I cannot do anything with that. You must be guilty for the way that you have lived, for the way that you have disappointed me, for the decisions you've made, for the things you've said about that other person, for the things you've thought, for the things you've watched, which I didn't want you to watch. Guilty. Now that is a judgment that we should fear. When you go into a courtroom, there's an element of hope. Guilty or innocent. But guilty, that verse says. And as we look at the Easter story, we can see different responses to how we might respond to those truths. You see, we can pretend it doesn't exist. That's what some of the chief priests and the Pharisees do. They pretend that Jesus' resurrection hasn't happened. We live our lives knowing that death awaits us, but we just ignore that truth. It's all right, I don't need to think about it. Or we can try and run away. Remember those disciples, nowhere to be seen. That's how we respond to Jesus. That's how we respond to that truth of death and judgment. We just run away as far as we can. Or like the soldiers seeing that angel, we just seize up in panic. We don't do anything about it, we just panic at the thought. Or we try and throw money at it, just like the Pharisees and the chief priests did with that news about the guards coming back. We try and throw money and think that that will solve the problem. But the problem's still there. You see, the way that we respond could be like one of those scenarios. Or We can be like the women. What do the women do? Well, look at verse 8. Verse 8, so the women hurried away from the tomb, having just been told by the angel that Jesus is risen. They're afraid, yet filled with joy. And they ran to tell his disciples, and suddenly Jesus meets them. Greetings, he said. They came to him and clasped his feet and worshipped him. You see, we can run away, or we can run to Jesus. We can run away and pretend things aren't an issue, or we can fall at Jesus' feet, grab hold of them, and say, I love you for everything you've done. You've defeated death that looms for me. That's why you've come back to prove that. But you've defeated the judgment that awaits me as well, because you have taken my place. I need not fear. That's the message of the women. Jesus comes back. Jesus is back. And the fact that he's back gives us that assurance that he's dealt with those two things, death and the judgment that awaits us. He's dealt with them. But the fact that he's dealt with them then requires us to respond. It requires us to be like those women who are scared by all the uncertainty and the things they don't understand, but are exploding in joy. Joy at seeing their Savior. Jesus has done it. I'm sure many of you followed the news on this Notre Dame story. It's terrible, isn't it? 750 years of building up within about half an hour. But as the reports came out afterwards, there are some amazing things that I'm going to pinch. You see, there were comments like this from a Parisian. I have known Notre Dame all my life, and now it's being destroyed before my eyes. We all feared. It really did look as though the unthinkable was happening, that it would disappear. It looked on the verge of being destroyed. But then in the cold light of morning, spirits were lifting, and two stone towers were unharmed. Hope existed. Another person says, the bells of Notre Dame will toll again, and it will be even more beautiful than before. Well, that's what the cross is. The cross looks like a disaster. It looks like a travesty. But as the debris unfolds, what do we see? We see something more glorious than was there before. We see Jesus completes his victory over death and completes his victory over sin. How will you respond to this Easter news? Will you run away from Jesus? Will you pretend that everything hasn't really happened and just ignore these things? Will you be slightly bored at hearing this news again? None of those responses are the responses we see from these women. Will you come and clasp Jesus' feet in joy? Cling hold to him and say thank you for doing these things. And then live a life knowing that your sin has been dealt with and that death is no longer the end, because you have a great future promised by this same Jesus. I will come again and take you to be with my Father. That is the promise. But how do we respond?